In just a moment, conversation. But first...
Should old acquaintance be forgot? NBC Bandstand says, of course not. So this week, Guy Lombardo is back with the sweetest music this side of heaven. And singing star Dick Hames once more is on hand. And rounding out this greatest entertainment in the land, there's Burt Parks and Shep Fields with his rippling rhythm band. It's music to your ears live every weekday morning on NBC Bandstand.
Now, stay tuned for Conversation on NBC.
The reason I asked you two eminent musicologists to join me around this baize-covered table, Mr. Brown, Mr. Rogers, is that in the course of a little show that I used to run, call this a show business, I happened to make some remarks about Mr. Elvis Presley a couple of times.
I heard them.
Did you hear them, Mr. Brown? Well, apparently a few other people heard them too, which consoled us. But gosh, this was the only time I ever got any mail, and it wasn't fan mail.
People angry, huh?
Oh, they were sore as can be, Mr. Rogers. And it occurred to me that I had really offended the musical susceptibilities, probably, of large numbers of people.
This is a program we call Conversation. It's dedicated to the art of good talk. Clifton Fadiman, editor of the American Treasury, is our host. His guests tonight are composer Richard Rogers and New York disc jockey Ted Brown. This transcribed program started several minutes ago. And as we turn up our microphones, our conversationalists are having fun with some current recordings and trying to dig rock and roll. Ted Brown is speaking.
Well, you know, when I played a few of his records when he first started, and I interrupted the record and put a little something in between. And I must say that his fans are very generous because I received gifts. Of course, I had to put them in a bucket until they stopped ticking.
I thought you were
happy with the fan mail, you know?
I thought you were kind of pro-Presley.
I am, but just to have a little fun, I did it once or twice.
Well, I didn't get any bombs, but gee whiz, those poison pen letters were tough, Mr. Rogers, on my equable disposition. I've been scared of these kids ever since.
They won't do anything to you.
Are you
They're
sure?
Too busy with Presley.
I hope he can keep them occupied. Well, Mr. Brown brought along a couple of records, Mr. Rogers, that he'd like us to listen to. And I thought we might begin with a minute or so of the one called Rock Around the Clock. Is that
yeah, this was Bill Haley, actually, who preceded Presley.
Yeah.
And sold, I don't know how many million of these. Oh. And it's got a beat. You just
now, this is the Simon Pure rock and roll article that we're going to listen to.
This has got a beat that I doubt very much if you'd be able to sit still.
Gee, I've sat still through lots of stuff. But all right, you want to listen to it, Mr. Rogers?
I'd love to hear it.
All right, here we go.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4.
Well, I ought to report to our listeners that Mr. Brown really was jiggling up and down on
he
the stage.
He certainly was.
Sure. And looking at him got me kind of excited, but it wasn't the music. It was his own rhythm.
But it does have a beat. You'll have to admit that.
All right. Let's analyze it. Mr. Rogers, Mr. Brown says he got a beat. But wouldn't that be true of any rhythmic piece of music? Alexander's Ragtime Band's got a beat,
too. I think
too.
This is what's back of the entire craze. And I don't see anything the matter with it. There's no reason why it shouldn't have a beat, and there's no reason why the beat shouldn't be persistent. This is true long before any of us was ever heard of. This is true in African music. It's true of very old American music. It's been true ever since there's been music, that a persistent beat has had an effect on people.
Sure.
And still makes Mr. Brown jiggle.
Well, we all know that drums are get you excited. That's really what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
What I want to find out is why this particular kind of beat music is so hot, why it gets so many people excited, and what makes it different from any other strongly accented rhythm.
Well, I can't prove this because I don't know enough about it. But it seems to me that the thing that is most exciting about this is its name. I think the name Rock and Roll is very attractive, and I think it's brought attention to this new kind of music, if it is new.
I know, but the kids who go for it, Mr. Rogers, are so used to the phrase rock and roll, that no longer is the attraction. It's the music itself. Wouldn't you say so, Mr. Brown, that gets them?
Well, let me put it this way. It is the music with the beat, and but people have been enjoying that kind of a beat for a long time. I think the personality has an awful lot to do with it. Just an awful lot. Now, you have made such remarks about Elvis Presley.
Nasty, weren't they?
Now, can you honestly say, after hearing this Rock Around the Clock, that you feel any great need to say anything about that record? I don't think you know what Bill Haley looks like or how he operates, do you?
No. It just seems to me a piece of rather simple jazz. I can't see it.
But, I mean, it's not offensive at all to you.
No. I think after about a minute of it, I've had enough. Mm-hmm.
Well, what if you had seen Bill Haley, and he actually, the way this group operates, they are really wild. I mean, the bass player is on his back with the bass up in the air, kicking his feet. Mr. Haley himself is unique in the fact that he has a little spit curl right here on the side. It's unusual, and he's just wild.
You're making it sound pretty seductive, I must say. I can get the same effect any afternoon in my house where we have two small children who also lie down on their backs and kick their feet and make funny noises. I mean, what's this got to do with music is what I'm after. I understand that these folks get excited, that the musicians get excited and do odd things, but I don't see what that's got to do with either composing or playing music.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that I don't think the Presley type of music or his interpretation of the music itself is what is offensive to you. It's the way it's presented in the man himself, the way he does it himself, the actual body movements, the way he interprets a lyric, maybe.
Uh-huh. Mr. Rogers, are you an amateur of Mr. Presley?
No, I'm not. Nor am I against him. I think he serves a purpose where the kids are concerned, and I think it's a good one.
What do you think the purpose is? I'm willing to learn.
Well, I think that they release a great deal of energy watching Presley, and energy that should be released watching something instead of doing something. I think it might prevent them from misbehaving. I think they release something this way, mm-hmm. just as I think that great masses of public release energy by going to baseball games.
Ah, I can understand it in baseball games. They make more sense to me.
No, this is very much the same thing.
Actually, we should be very happy, in a way, about Elvis Presley, because, you know, he could have been a group, and then we really would be in trouble, wouldn't we?
He's pretty much of a group.
Well, why? Now tell me one thing. I'll buy a little of that, Mr. Rogers, about releasing energy and all that sort of thing. But why is it that the release of energy on the part of these youngsters seems to be accompanied by such antisocial behavior? Now, if you go to see the Dodgers, sure, people throw a pop bottle once in a while, but on the whole, people are reasonably well-behaved. They just yell and cheer and so forth. But at the... I've been cutting out, pieces from the paper, Mr. Brown, about the behavior of these youngsters, and it seems sort of semi-criminal.
What location?
London. Let's say London. Look at this one, Mr. Brown. It says here there's a radio station in Minneapolis, SPT. Someone threw a rock through the station's front window, reading, "I am a teenager. You play Elvis Presley or else we tear up this town." The station also received telephone calls from girls and boys who growled viciously, "You play Elvis Presley or else." Now, that seems to me a little... if that's energy release, okay, but you're being kind of good-natured about these kids, aren't you, Mr.
Rogers?
Yes,
but I don't take this particular dispatch from Minneapolis as being typical. I think most of the kids who listen to Elvis Presley behave themselves very well. I don't think they throw rocks through windows.
You just hear about the other.
This is what you would hear about. You don't hear about the kid who sits home at 8 o'clock at night listening to the record. You hear more about juvenile delinquency in general, but that doesn't mean that that most of the kids throughout the country who like to listen to rock and roll are bad kids.
No, I wouldn't make such a blanket indictment either.
No.
But I think that you do hear about an awful lot of them that do seem to be kind of bad, or at least overexcited.
Well, look, you heard the same thing when Sinatra first went out. There was the same squealing,
Yes,
and
that's true.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And they were violent about it. They loved him.
And they got over it, you think?
No, they didn't get over it. He's still popular.
Do they still squeal?
And actually, it's like a parent saying, look, you cannot go to that movie, and you want to go all the time, and you want to go twice as much. So with Sinatra, they didn't say anything. They said, well, this is a phase. We're going through this, and he's a nice, clean-cut American boy, and he stands still when he sings. So, all right, let him go a little crazy in the aisles. But here, they have made... put up such opposition to it that they're just fighting back. That's all they're doing. You would do it. Your children most likely would do it.
You men really reassure me, because I was really getting kind of alarmed by these reports.
I'm in a unique position because I will go along with it just to a certain point. And then I say...
When do you get off the train?
Well, I get off the train, actually, when Mr. Presley just gets a little too uninhibited.
Mm-hmm. And, you mean visually?
Yeah, there's one thing that I honestly feel is wrong. You take a fellow like... Remember when Johnny Ray was started... Johnny Ray would stand up there, and he would go through these contortions and fantastic things, and he'd just fall on the floor when it's over, and you'd say, why? And he'd say, I get this way when I sing the song. And he'd be singing a song called The Little White Cloud That Cried. Now, how emotional can you get over a cloud that cries? That's the way he was presenting it. He had a way, a gimmick, and he was doing it. Presley is the same way. Sometimes he just goes. You say, why? He says, I feel it. I can't stand it.
I think he really does, eh?
Well, I don't know whether he really feels it or not.
Mr. Brown, could we listen to a little of this great master, Senor Presley, or Dr. Presley?
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, the crying on the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't nothing but a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said you was high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, they said you was high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, you ain't nothing but a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. You ain't nothing but a hound.
Thanks very much.
Well, there's something unholy about playing that with Dick Rogers here in the room.
Well, it doesn't bother me.
We have the most eminent composer in his field in the world here to my left, but he seems to be taking it calmly. A matter of fact, you take it much more calmly, maybe because you know so much more about music than I do, than I can. To me, that's the darndest nonsense. Mr. Presley cannot sing, he cannot talk, he cannot move. He knows nothing whatsoever about music.
Oh, he can
and
move.
The music is wrong. Oh, just a minute now.
All right, go ahead. Look, that's what I think.
He plays his own guitar. He is playing the guitar, right?
Highly talented young man. He can play a guitar.
Well, I'd say Burl Ives is acceptable to an awful lot of people. I wouldn't exactly call him a guitar player. I mean, I'm sure you like Burl Ives.
Yes, I do. He's an artist.
But he certainly wouldn't make, I don't think, half what he's making now just on his guitar playing. He's an artist. Well, Presley is an artist, too, in his own way. I could show you other people doing the same song, and they don't have the little bit that you need, that extra quality that he has.
What is it, though?
Let's start with Mr. Presley himself. He is a good-looking boy, and I think that your children, your wife, will admit that he has certain appeal.
Mine won't.
Not mine, either. We got two wives against Presley. However,
this is very... By the way, you know, this Hound Dog record is really taking the country, and not only that, but it's affecting the dogs, too. You know, I have an Airedale at home who's growing sideburns.
Well, I can understand the dogs liking Mr. Presley. I mean, that makes some sense. It's human beings liking him that I find mysterious.
Well, I've always found that when an artist gets up on a stage and he does something and you accept it because you feel it's coming from within and it's natural... Yeah. It's not always a natural thing. It's a polished thing that he has practiced, and he's got it down to a science. And Mr. Presley is the same way. He gets up there, and he puts on a show for you, a finished, polished show. He does the job he starts out to do, and that is to sing a song in his own style. Yeah. He has the beat. You don't hear him hitting any bad notes on the guitar. He knows when to stop, the breaks, everything else. Plus, the ingredient of being able to excite an audience to the point where... Well, my wife is, she's mad about me, of course, but...
Of course.
But she saw Presley the first time, and she said, this boy has got to be it. He's got to be it. He has to make it. It's impossible for him not to.
Well, Mr. Rogers, there must be something inferior about your wife and my wife as compared to Mr. Brown's.
I just think that you're being a little narrow-minded about this,
very,
that's all.
Very. Just the way I think you are.
Well, I'll tell you. I heard your remarks about Elvis Presley when you were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you're condemning him for being an uninhibited performer, and in the same sense, you said anything you wanted to say about him.
Oh, I think yes.
You didn't pull out the star. I mean, you pulled them all out.
Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm against censorship. I think Mr. Presley ought to sing and do whatever you call it, open his mouth and make those sounds quite uninhibitedly, having the slightest objection to his making $500,000 or $10 million.
Well, what is your objection?
I have no objection at all. I just think he's terrible. I don't want to have him off the air.
Well, do you think he's terrible in the song he sings and the way he sings it?
I think he's not a musician, that's about all. He can't sing.
Well, you have Frank Sinatra. I doubt he couldn't sit down and play a concerto at the piano.
I'm not asking for classical renditions. Don't misunderstand.
Well, what do you mean by a musician?
Well, he doesn't sound pleasant, for one thing.
Well, he certainly doesn't sound pleasant in the sense that Sinatra does.
No, well,
this is a smoother, much more acceptable kind of voice.
That's right.
And
I
technique
agree with that.
I should think, the masses of public after a short period of time. Mm. I don't know how long this can last. As a matter of fact, my theory about this whole rock and roll business and Presley and the bass player that Mr. Brown was just talking about, who plays lying on his back because he's so excited, I think this is all gimmick.
That's right. It's a phase.
Just showmanship, you mean.
Just showmanship, and has right. nothing to do with lasting quality. And has nothing to do whatsoever with art. And I don't know why we discuss this in terms of art.
Well,
this is fad.
I didn't use the word art. I don't think this is good pop music, Mr. Rogers. That's my objection to it.
Well, if it's pop, it's pop, and it is popular.
It's well, now, I don't hear you condemning a record like, Georgia Gibbs. There was a girl called Laverne Baker who made an original record of Tweedly Dee, which is rock and roll, bordering on rhythm and blues.
Oh.
And Georgia Gibbs just listened to the record and made another record with Georgia Gibbs, but exactly alike, and was a big hit, million seller. Now, is it because Georgia Gibbs does it that makes it different, or is it because...
Miss Gibbs can sing. I've had her on my show several times.
Of course she can sing.
She can sing.
And I think Miss Gibbs will tell you that Elvis Presley can belt mm-hmm. a song out the way he is intended to belt it out.
Mm-hmm. Gee, you're overwhelming me, boys. I'm going to try to like it. Can I listen to one more of these rock and roll records? Maybe I'll get to like it.
All right, here's one. Listen to that.
Lover, when you're near me, and I hear you speak my name.
You hear those beats in the back, that bongo, 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 lover, when you're near me. That's a crazy beat. Do you like that record?
Yeah, I like that.
You bet you like that record because Dick Rogers wrote it. That's why you like
that
record.
No, I didn't write that.
You like that record?
I tell you, I have a theory about that, too, a feeling about it. People want to know how upset I get when I hear these hypoed arrangements of old songs of mine. And I'll tell you as briefly as I can what my feeling is. It were possible to make these people stick to the original. We'd be off the air, we'd be out of copies, we wouldn't be selling anything inside of 6 months.
Is that so?
Yes. That was written as a waltz, wasn't it?
That was written as a waltz. A very romantic song.
Yes, I remember.
Now, this is kind of outrageous in its way, if you want to get hurt by this sort of thing. But the only thing that would hurt me would be to have my stuff not played and not sold. Now, I think that it would die of monotony without the arrangements. I must say that when the song is new, I like it to be done the way it was written, because I would like people to hear it at least once the way I intended it to be heard.
Over in England, they've just passed a law forbidding a rock and roll rearrangement of Coming Through the Rye, Mr. Brown. BBC
is
forbidden.
Yes, I read that.
Now, they're apparently much less tolerant than Mr. Rogers is.
Well, I don't know. I was in England during the war, and, we had the jitterbug craze going here at the Opera House. What was that? The Covent Garden? I think that's what it was. They were absolutely three, four times as wild as any of the the young boys and girls here.
What's your explanation of that?
I think it's the opposition to something that highlights it.
You mean if I came out in favor of Presley, he'd collapse? Say, there's something I'll think about then.
No, but you might stop getting those poison pen letters.
I might at that.
But Mr. Rogers said that he doesn't mind his arrangements being hypoed a little, maybe, because they're on and they'll sell and fine. Maybe that's what Mr. Presley does, too. I mean, he could sing a ballad, but maybe not as well as he'd like to, and so he hypoes his presentation.
I know he hypoes it, but he hypoes it out of all naturalness, out of all melody.
Yes, but I think you're flavored by the reaction, not by the performance. I think you're flavored by the idea that the kids are getting up and jumping up and down and maybe ripping up some seats here and there, or you read an article in here where they've done something to a subway train, or they've sent a letter to a... Do you know the letters that they used to get for Sinatra? Why, I'll tell you, I when Johnny Ray was big, mm-hmm. You dare say anything about Johnny Ray, you'd get poison pen letters. I'm turning you off. I'm not going to listen. Don't you dare do that. And I'm sure if a station came out and said, from now on, we ban all Richard Rogers music, I imagine you could sit down and send them a letter that would be a scathing-type letter,
well,
and I'm sure that...
yes, Mr. Fatterman would be the one to throw the rocks.
You bet. You bet he would.
I don't know that I'd throw rocks, but I certainly get sore as can be about it. And yet, I don't think it would arouse the same kind of passion that is aroused in these youngsters.
You've got to have an equalizer. I mean, there's a leveling-off period, and you're coming into it right now, I think. When it first hit, sure, the tours at the Bill Haley and Fats Domino and Sam the Man Taylor, wild reaction to it. But they're leveling off now to a point where it's sort of...
How long do you think this rage is going to last?
Oh, well, I think it's certainly decreased now with the Broadway shows, the beautiful instrumentals that are coming out. It's all an equalizer.
Could I say something about this?
Wish you would.
I hope it lasts forever.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you?
Because this is just great for me.
It makes you sound better, even.
It makes me sound better. I think that this incessant hammering, to which I have no objection in itself, but this beat all the time,
yeah,
makes them turn back to Romberg and Kern.
Well, does
and
it
Victor
though, really,
yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Oh, Kip, never since I've had anything in front of the public has my old stuff sold as well as it's selling today.
That may not necessarily be a consequence, though, of this rock and roll.
Well, I'm inclined to think that the rock and roll has something to do with it. I think if you get hit on the head with a hammer often enough, you want to take a nice warm bath and stop getting hit.
I think the record companies realize that. They're putting out the albums that...
Do you know who the biggest lyric writer in the world is today?
No.
A fellow who's been dead 13 years, Larry Hart.
You mean still selling?
He sells more copies today than any lyric writer in the world. Now, there's something back of this. And I think rock and roll and this incessant hitting has a great deal to do with it. I think people turn away. They need change of pace very badly.
Yes, but they're turning back to a kind of music which is standard, that doesn't depend on manias and rages.
My Fair Lady isn't standard. That's brand new. And they just love it. And they should.
You said, mentioned My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
There's a song in My Fair Lady, I Could Have Danced All Night.
Yeah.
Now, when Julie Andrews does it, there's a certain sweetness and warmth when she does it in the show.
When she does anything.
The record that sold a million was a hypoed record. I could have danced all night. I could have danced all night.
In other words, vulgarized.
Not vulgarized, no.
I mean, just the way you yourself are imitating it, Mr. Brown, makes it sound
well,
bad.
I may be vulgar, but the
no,
record was.
No, that's not what I meant. I mean, as soon as you hypo the rhythm of that very sweet, charming song, you're making it into something that it wasn't intended to be by the composer. Tell me, what do you think the next rage is going to be, Mr. Brown? After this one dies out, Mr. Rogers thinks it may.
Well, I personally, from just from the records that are coming out and from the way they're selling... And it's already started. There's an instrumental rage going on, and there's a record out called When the White Lilacs Bloom Again. It's beautiful violins and a very catchy tune. There's one that just came out called Lala Colette and Portuguese Washerwoman. These things, they are catching on. And they're catching on with not the people over 20, but 16, 17.
Portuguese Washerwoman I heard on the air the other day. It was lovely. That one I like myself.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, I wish we had it.
That was written by Elvis Presley, you know.
Now, you know, for a moment, you got me so scared.
For a moment, he nearly backed up. Yeah. I saw that look come into his eye. But I think that's the next phase. And as I said, the music from the Broadway shows has helped an awful lot, I think, in sort of a counterbalance.
Mr. Rogers, do you, in writing a new series of songs for a new show, ever take into account what people seem to be like, be interested in? For example, in your next show, would you take into account the fact that rock and roll is a rage?
No.
You wouldn't give a darn about
it? No, I couldn't because this isn't the way I'm able to work.
You could write this sort of kind of thing if you wanted to, couldn't you?
Well, if it were appropriate, I could make a pretty good pass at it.
I bet you could.
But I can't work that way. You see, because I work with the theater, I have to work according to the situation.
So the musical modes of the moment don't interest you at all?
Not in the least. If the boy meets the girl for the first time, what I have to say musically is something about this meeting and can't have anything to do with what's popular in Kansas City or on Tin Pan Alley. Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you, may I suggest that's one of the many reasons why your music lasts? Because it was written out of a sincere emotion at the time, without respect to what people seem to be liking at that moment.
And not only that, but I think they could be the first one to tell you that if you didn't have the phases of rock and roll and the different ones that have come along, that his beautiful music would, not the right word, but it would be boring after a while, the same type of music all the time.
You think he needs these manias as a kind of bad background?
Oh, no, I don't think he needs them, but...
I think he can get along without them.
Yeah, but... You know, I read something in one of the columns that I think you would like. A television director doing his show, finally, after pulling his hair out, walked over to him and said, look, don't just do something, stand there.
Mr. Brown and Mr. Rogers, we had on a conversation 8 or 9 months ago, a distinguished music critic. It was Mr. Pleasance's notion that jazz and... its associated styles, of which I presume rock and roll is one, were the American music. That is to say, that all our attempts at imitation of traditional European classical music were the bunk. That this was our great contribution. I mean, the same way that Wagner is a great contribution to German music, and so forth. Would you be willing to state that anything like rock and roll can be considered as music in that high sense?
Not this early, certainly.
I mean, can it ever achieve truly interesting musical form, the sort of thing that we've been regaled with?
It would have to, I think it would have to develop. I think there would have to be variation.
But you can't vary it. It's just one simple jungle beat.
Well, we don't know that yet. We don't know whether it can be varied or not. So far, it's a persistent beat, as I've said before, and that's about all. But this can be varied.
In other words, you think it really has musical possibilities. I'm not down talking of showmanship possibilities.
I don't
admit
know.
It has that.
I don't know, because it's too early.
You've been listening to Conversation, a transcribed series of programs dedicated to the art of good talk. Our host was Clifton Fadiman, author of Party of One. His guests tonight were Richard Rogers, composer of Carousel and The King and I, and popular New York disc jockey Ted Brown. Next week at this same time, Clifton Fadiman will have as his guests Dr. Bergen Evans, professor of literature at Northwestern University, and Leo Rosten, editorial advisor of Look magazine, who will be discussing the books of Horatio Alger and various concepts of the American hero.